Mama's in the kitchen, I heard the back door slam. I'm out of that kitchen, honey, and been scorching that ham. And let's fan it.
Good morning and welcome to Who's in the Kitchen. I'm Philothea Beeson and you're listening to WDRT 91.9 from Viroqua Community Radio from the ground up. This is Who's in the Kitchen and we're going to be talking about food, and today I have a guest who is going to be talking about a special kind of diet for people going through cancer, facing cancer and cancer treatments. And I found this topic very, very interesting, and I know that many people listening will either be in this situation or have friends or family that are, and this seems like a wonderful opportunity to talk about food as medicine, and you know that's a topic that I do like to talk about. So my guest is Pat Gray. Welcome, Pat.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Lovely to be here this morning.
Good. And Pat is a new acquaintance of mine, and just came here from Asheville, North Carolina. So got the cold weather pretty quickly and is getting used to Wisconsin. But Pat, how did you get here from North Carolina?
Well, I'm a Midwesterner. I grew up in the Midwest. I grew up in Indiana, and I lived for 25 years in Chicago. And I just moved to Asheville about 8 years ago. And I went there to go to herbal medicine school and also did some other training in stone medicine treatments, and reached a point where I was needing to get back to the Midwest again. And I have a very close friend. One of my best friends lives in Gays Mills, and so I'm living out on her farm now. I moved here in June.
Well, welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think you're going to fit right in. I don't know what stone medicine is. What's that?
It's a Taoist form of Chinese medicine. It's over 2,000 years old. It's the Jade Purity School of Stone Medicine, or the Jade Purity School of Chinese Medicine. And that school incorporates using stone placement on the body and the energy of stone in addition to acupuncture and Chinese medicine.
Oh, my goodness. Is that something that you're going to pursue as a way of living?
I will be doing that.
And earning a living?
I will be doing that when I get a little bit more situated. But yeah, I have that plan is in the near future.
Well, you have several years of training in this now.
Oh, just in the stone medicine, just about a year, year and a half.
But in the herbal medicine?
In the herbal medicine, that's only been since 2011.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it can be a lifetime. I know I've talked with people who are in acupuncture and acupressure and Chinese medicine, and it's a lifelong study. Never ends.
Yeah, and I did Reiki. Reiki is the kind of form of healing energy that I started working with probably 15 years ago, maybe. So that was kind of my starting off point for doing healing work.
Well, our topic is, we're going to really be basically working with a book that you discovered because you also had cancer, right?
Right.
Three years ago?
Right.
And found this book, The Cancer Fighting Kitchen, and you and I started talking about that, and I just got so enthusiastic, I thought, let's do a show on this. It's really exciting. So we'll be working with your own experience. I consider you an expert in what you've done with yourself, and what you know about this book and how you've been able to use it. So I'm just going to just dive right in on this topic. So did you have any idea, anything, well, I guess you sort of did, about food as medicine, because obviously you were already studying this kind of thing. But, you know, how did you actually run across this book? At what point in your cancer journey did you find this book?
Well, I was diagnosed with breast cancer in November or October of 2015, and I had surgery, a lumpectomy, and lymph nodes removed in November of 2015. And then in January of 2016, I started chemo, And then following that, I had radiation. And so my treatment ended in June of 2016.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as food, as medicine, I've, you know, probably since the 80s have been aware of eating organically and, you know, food as a way to support and nurture the body, but not how it can specifically be used almost in a medicinal way, as, you know, some foods are anti-inflammatory, some are antioxidant, some help regulate blood sugar, that kind of thing, until really I came across this book. And I had finished chemo. I don't know if I came across the book maybe when I was, you know, doing radiation. I went through 4 weeks of radiation, 5 days a week. So, and I honestly can't even tell you how I came across it. I don't know if I saw it in a bookstore. Probably that's it. I saw it in a bookstore, or, you know, I don't even know exactly where I came across it, but I just love this book. I found it really fascinating, and the information about food and how it works, and really supportive. It's well written, it's very informative, and it's full of beautiful photographs and exceptional recipes and information about food.
So is it a book about preventing cancer, or mainly about how to live with cancer, how to heal it, or how to, well, I know you told me how to go through some of the treatments.
Right.
So what is the scope of the book?
The scope of the book starts off kind of giving you information about food and how foods have properties in them that, as I said, act as an anti-inflammatory or an antioxidant, or, and it also kind of focuses on how to, not only for the patient, but for family members who are trying to support them, people who are bringing food or caring for the person. It delves into specific side effects. So you have kind of a beginning area of the book that talks about, names the various side effects, which can be, you know, fatigue. Chemo can cause in some people mouth sores. So you have that. You have low white blood cell count, nausea, you know, I mean, it kind of insomnia, it kind of goes on and on, the various side effects. And so it'll list a side effect, and then it will list, you know, maybe 10 recipes that are in the book that help with that specific side effect. You know, if it's something with fatigue, then it'll have a section that talks about, or it names, you know, kind of things that are nourishing, or then it'll name something that, things that work specifically on boosting the immune system, or things that kind of strengthen body and help with white blood cell count and stuff like that. If it's something like mouth sores, then it will give you these lists of things that are soothing to the mouth, things that kind of have, you know, some of them are mucilaginous, you know, something like something simple like oatmeal. And then it has elixirs or teas that are good for that. And then in addition to that, after you have that section that kind of talks about specific side effects, there's a section that just lists vegetables and fruits and nuts and various types of food. And after each one, it lists whether it's an anti-inflammatory, an antimicrobial, whether it regulates blood sugar, and it gives you a little information on all of these ingredients, including herbs and spices, something like cardamom or, you know, basil and oregano. Basil and oregano, I discovered, are, you know, not only anti-inflammatory, but they're antimicrobial and antifungal. They work with the immune system. So it's full of it. It's full of this really great information.
Yes,
about how you can treat the body with food, and then gives you these wonderful, delicious recipes that, you know, you can kind of make and gear towards whatever stage the person is going through. Mm-hmm. Also, it talks about, these are good for while you're doing chemo. These are good for when you're doing radiation. You know, because it all changes. This is good for when you're finished with all your treatment, and then you're just trying to build your body back up.
This just sounds like a wonderful treasure house. And I can see it could even be used not just with cancer, But anytime you say you have inflammatory disease or something like that, of course, right. Inflammation is behind a lot of illnesses and diseases. So that, you know, it really extends beyond cancer treatment.
Right.
And, you know, I'm just really excited to hear more about the book. I'm talking with Pat Gray. She is living in Gays Mills right now, and she went through cancer treatment about 3 years ago and found this book along the way, and it is just it sounds like a wonderful compendium. I mean, even though you'd studied herbology and everything, it just, the way they've organized the information and so forth sounds so useful.
Also, one of the things in treating cancer and for family members to support people who are going through treatment, not only is there fatigue, but there's also can be loss of appetite, and, you know, it can affect your sense of smell and your sense of taste. And I myself, because I grew up in the Midwest, all my closest friends and my family basically are in the Midwest, and I was out in North Carolina pretty much on my own going through treatment. I had a few friends that would come and help me out here and there and, you know, drop food off. But in general, I really was kind of on my own going through this. And it's very difficult when you're going through treatment to be doing your own grocery shopping and then coming home and preparing your own food. And one of the things that's delightful about this book is that there's a chapter called Dollops of Yum. And Dollops of Yum has chutneys and compotes and what they call drizzles and all these things that are kind of concentrated flavor packets. So in this chapter of Dollops of Yum, one of my favorite things that I found in the book is a lemon basil drizzle. And it's this concentrated, you know, it's not like a pesto. It's a little bit oilier than that, but it's a concentrated kind of lemon and basil and oil. And you can make that and then keep it in your fridge for a week at a time or so. And I found just, you know, putting it on eggs in the morning and mixing it with just in with salad or making a bowl of soup and then putting a, you know, mm-hmm. a teaspoon of it on top of the warm soup. And things like that are super helpful because they make food a little bit exciting again and they make it alluring. And food becomes a task often when you're sick mm-hmm. for anybody, no matter what the treatment is or what the diagnosis or, you know, food can be a chore. And it takes a lot of energy.
I know.
To shop and prepare and cook and clean up and all of that. And so these little things that they do and that they offer to keep food as something enjoyable.
Right. I remember someone moved into our community a few years ago, and she was looking for someone who would come and prepare her food for her. She was recovering from cancer. And it was hard to find somebody who was really willing to do the work, and then you realize, wow, but it's really work for the person who's sick, who's exhausted, depressed, doesn't maybe have any appetite, and yet is supposed to be now learning new ways of using food and new recipes.
Right.
And I'm sure there is really, you know, a need for people in the community to be able to help people out this way. And, you know, one of the things we have a lot going on out here is meal wheels. You know, whenever anybody's sick, right away, a whole bunch of people sign up for a meal wheel so that there's always something being brought
right.
each day for 2 or 3 weeks. But this is, you know, seems like a great resource and helps you realize you're not just me bringing, you know, meat and potatoes or something like that, but maybe even tuning into what the person is having to suffer through, or, you know, one particular phase of the illness where they require things. So, yeah. So how would you want to approach this? By different symptoms, or by foods, or just by recipes?
I think that getting into some of the recipes would be great. One thing I wanted to say is that, you know, we're often told what not to eat. You know, when you are, especially with cancer, one of the main things that you are supposed to avoid is, because that's what cancer cells feed off of, the mutation in the cell that makes it a cancer cell, is that it cannot take its energy from oxygen. All healthy cells are fed by oxygen. cancer cells cannot be fed by oxygen. They're in fact fed by sugar, which is why when you're having a PET scan and you drink a glucose solution and wait, and then you do the PET scan, that's what it looks for. It looks for where there is rapid cell activity.
Pac-Man.
Is the cancer cells feeding on sugar.
Oh, my gosh.
So that's one of the things that you really are supposed to avoid.
Oh,
boo-hoo. But at the same time,
yes.
At the same time, there's maple syrup is an antioxidant, and it aids in DNA repair. And it's high in zinc, which benefits the prostate. And so actually that's very good for someone who may have prostate cancer or has a higher levels and a prostate cancer risk. So there's some variation on that, you know, and you're supposed to avoid processed foods, especially processed meats and smoked meats and stuff like that. But that doesn't necessarily mean you should avoid all meat. So there are recipes in here for fish, and there's a lot of recipes for chicken. You know, there's a great like chicken and rice recipe, which is very nourishing. You know, the body wants to be nourished at that time. One thing that I found really eye-opening is that I had a wonderful acupuncturist in Asheville, just a phenomenal woman and healer and really intuitive. And you know, you're always told that, you know, eat green leafy vegetables. Those are really important. Those are really healthy. They give you all these vitamins and minerals. And it was during my chemo period. And I went in one day and I was feeling badly. And I said, well, I haven't really been eating well enough. And she said, well, what do you mean? What do you mean by that? And I said, I have these green vegetables. I bought them. I'm trying to make them, and then I never want to eat them. I make them, and they don't taste, and I just don't eat it. I said, I've just been wanting to eat a soup that, you know, someone dropped off, and I had another soup. And she said, well, you shouldn't be eating that right now, not when you're doing the chemo. Because your liver, green leafy vegetables take more from the body to digest. It takes a little bit more. And she said, your liver is struggling so much right now to process the metals and the chemicals of the chemo treatment. It's being so taxed just to process that what you really need to be doing is nourishing and supporting and nurturing the liver. And so that would be root vegetables.
Oh, my goodness.
So that would be like sweet potatoes and carrots and, you know, the winter squashes. And I said, oh, my God. I said, the soup that my friend brought over was a squash soup. And the soup that I had made that I kept craving was a carrot, lemon, ginger soup. And every day, that's all I wanted to eat. And that was a great instance of my body knowing exactly what it needed at that time. When my mind was trying to tell me, based on things I'd read or that I'd heard, that I should be doing something else. And those things are great. Green leafy vegetables are great, you know, before the chemo treatment or, you know, a week or, you know, or a couple weeks after. But, you know, all cancers are different and all chemos that treat them are different. So my regimen was one chemo treatment every 3 weeks. I went every 3 weeks for a chemo treatment. Other people, they have it every week. Some types of chemo, like leukemia or something, it's a pill someone can take orally every day. It varies specific to the cancer. You know, if you're going once every 3 weeks, you could eat maybe, you know, somewhere in between the two treatments, some cooked green. So it was just enlightening to me to know, and for my body to know what it needed.
Right. And there's probably times when cooked food is more easily assimilated than, you know, like leafy greens or something like that.
Right.
And cooked carrots maybe instead of raw carrots. I don't know. But, you know, they would give that indication. I'd just like to share the name of the book and the author because I feel like, you know, you're really grateful for someone having done all this research and put this beautiful book together.
And it is really a beautiful book, too. It's got great photographs. It's The Cancer Fighting Kitchen by Rebecca Katz. She's a well-known cookbook author. She has other cookbooks. But it's nourishing, big flavor recipes for cancer treatment and recovery.
Oh, that's wonderful.
The subtitle. And I wrote down some of the recipes that I liked a lot. There is this elixir, you know, so these are some of the other things. It's kind of in the dollops of yum. This is called Common Wheels, Most Nourishing and Healing Tea. And it was developed by people at the Commonweal Cancer Help Program. It was a renowned treatment for patients and caregivers. And this has fresh ginger and coriander seeds, cardamom pods, cinnamon sticks, cloves, and mixed with rice milk or almond milk and a little bit of maple syrup and vanilla. And so it's, you know, it's yummy and nourishing, and it has things that are good for digestion. Ginger is especially good for digestion and bringing warmth to your stomach and to your body, and then the other spices. So that was something I liked quite a bit.
It's kind of like a chai, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, no caffeine. So, and then there's a magic mineral broth, which is really nice. You know, broths are really nourishing. So there's a recipe for a beef bone broth, and this mineral broth, which is a lot of vegetables that, you know, have various vitamins and minerals in them, and that you kind of just keep that on hand. And that's a great thing if you have someone that's going through any kind of treatment, is to, you know, making bone broths is, you know, kind of the hip thing, or the, you know, the rediscovered thing in the last few years. And they're super nourishing. And so making a kind of beef or chicken bone broth, or this mineral broth, and that can be, you know, kept in like a big mason jar, one of those gigantic mason jars, and someone can have it in their fridge for, you know, a week or however long, 2 weeks, up to 2 weeks, depending. And, you know, in between meals, or when they're feeling nauseous and they don't really, you know, they don't feel like they can handle a whole meal, you know, that's a great thing to drop off for somebody.
Wow. So what would, tell us the recipe for that. What vegetables would be best to put into that?
So for the mineral broth, that has carrots, yellow onions, leek, celery, and unpeeled red potatoes, unpeeled sweet potatoes, both Japanese or garnet, garlic cloves, parsley. This also has a strip of kombu, which is kind of the Japanese seaweed, and peppercorns, juniper berries, bay leaves, water, and sea salt.
Is there any fat in that?
No. It does not list any fat. And then the pasture beef bone broth has got 3 pounds of marrow bones from grass-fed organic beef. That's an important thing, especially in red meat and beef, is organic, simply because of the types of chemicals that are often on feed for them, as well as whatever hormones or
medications
that they give to the cattle, but also the fact that there's a lot of pesticides used on that feed, and so that, of course, is going to be in their bodies. So that has the bone marrow and carrots, onions, leeks, celery, the potatoes. So it's basically the same thing. But what you do add, which is important, anyone who does bone broth knows, this also, you would add to basically the mineral broth recipe, in addition to the beef bones, you add apple cider vinegar. Vinegar is the most important thing, and that helps to pull the protein and the collagen and the nutrients from the marrow of the bones.
I've just been making a bone broth today.
Oh, really?
And I didn't know. I'm going to run home and add some more things to it.
Oh,
but it
yeah.
is, oh gosh, it just came off of our steer that we just had butchered just a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, awesome.
And grass-fed, organic, and boy, I, you know, made sure I got a lot of bones, and they're just full of marrow. It's so exciting.
Yeah. Yeah, borscht is another. I just made borscht recently.
Oh, can you give us that recipe? Can you quick look that up?
It's not from this cookbook. Mm-hmm. It's just I crave borscht. I lived in Chicago for 25 years, and every fall when it would start getting cold out, I would head up to the Polish area and get borscht and pierogies and all those super yummy.
Well, I didn't realize that borscht could have meat in it. I thought it was always just a vegetarian, you know, beet or root, but someone fixed it with meat a couple of winters ago, and I thought, wow, this is really good. Yeah. So does it have?
Yeah, the recipe that I made did. Mm-hmm. I used bone-in beef shank, but I also got some oxtail from Dwayne.
Yes. Our favorite butcher.
Our favorite butcher. Dwayne had oxtail, so I have those at home in the freezer, and I'm going to make a soup with those pretty soon.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, he really recommends using oxtail.
I know. He's a big fan.
So would you have apple cider vinegar in that, too?
It did have vinegar.
So in a borscht, what do you have besides the beets?
Let's see.
Do you have potatoes?
Yeah, I did have potatoes.
And onions?
I had potatoes, I had onions, I had carrots. Mm-hmm. I don't remember that there was garlic in it. There must have been a little bit of garlic.
Oh, speak about garlic a little bit. The garlic and it sounds like the allium family is helpful.
Yeah, I mean, those are great antibacterials and anti-inflammatories and in general. Yeah, I had, many years ago in Chicago, I had a Polish landlord. He lived on the first floor, I lived on the second floor, and he just... he was actually German, but he had grown up at the Polish-German border, and he spoke both German and Polish. And he would just eat like 4 or 5 cloves of raw garlic every day, kind of from first day of October through to May. And that was his... That's how he stayed healthy.
That was his medicine.
That was his medicine. That's how he stayed healthy.
Oh, that's... Well, you have to almost eat that along with your friend so that you can... Somehow you don't smell it if you've been eating it too.
My mom was Irish, and the extent of their Irish seasoning was salt, pepper, and onion, and that was pretty much it. She did use a McCormick seasoning packet to make spaghetti and stuff, but I really...
You didn't grow up with garlic.
I did not really grow up with garlic. If it was, I think probably it was more like a powdered garlic, you know? Mm-hmm. My dad was a great cook. I think he did use some garlic, but still, it wasn't the same. It wasn't until I went away to college and really started cooking myself a lot and making hummus from scratch and really getting into a lot of garlic. And when I'd go home, I'd come in and hug my mom, and first thing she would say was like, "You smell like garlic." She really had a sensitive nose to it.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'd like to go over some more recipes. We're working from a book called The Cancer-Fighting Kitchen by Rebecca Katz. And my guest is Pat Gray, and she went through cancer and cancer treatment about 3 years ago and discovered this book along the way. And I have commented to her that I know people have come home from the hospital and haven't got a clue of how they should be living, how they should be eating, what changes they should make in their diet, that hasn't really gotten that much attention. And even I wouldn't have thought about eating for the different kinds of treatments and understanding what is happening to your body when you're having chemo or when you're having radiation and how they could affect you differently. And you adapt your diet to what you're going through at the time. So it's an ingenious book, and it sounds like just a tremendous amount of research went into it. But just pulling things together, just the organization of the book. I really haven't had a chance to look at it, but you've been describing it to me, so.
Yeah, and she did do a lot of research and has worked with people in the field, in the cancer field, and done a lot of studies and worked with patients and seen. I mean, that's if you talk to anybody who is in the treatment of cancer, one of the key issues is often getting people going through treatment to eat enough, to eat well. You have to sustain yourself because your body is going through an onslaught.
Well,
it's not just the cancer. that can, you know, is fighting your body and, you know, destroying aspects of your body. But the treatments are often more debilitating, you know, and destructive. And I mean, I did both. I did chemo and radiation, and I did acupuncture every week, and I did Chinese herbs. So I, you know, thought I'm going to go at it from both angles.
Okay.
And the right. acupuncture and the herbs supported my body in dealing with the Western treatment.
Mm-hmm.
I did get a second opinion. I came back to Chicago to get a second opinion on whether or not I needed chemo. And I went to one of the top people, top breast cancer specialists in the country at Rush Presbyterian Hospital. And they recommended the exact same protocol that the oncologist in Asheville did. So I went at it with both
right.
angles. But you have to nourish and support the body for it to be able to withstand the Western treatment. And so to get back to some of the recipes that I thought, you know, I liked quite a bit. I mean, it's full of them and there's many, but carrot, orange, and fennel soup was a really good one. It was kind of a little variation on the lemon carrot ginger soup that I've been making for years. One thing that's really great, I did not have mouth sores from my chemo, but that is a super common side effect for a lot of people who do. But there's a cooling cucumber and avocado soup. That,
oh.
I mean, just hearing it, you know that it's going to be soothing to the mouth.
Exactly.
And it's
nourishing. So how did they make that? That would just be a cold raw soup, wouldn't it? The cucumber avocado.
Yeah, that's going to be a cooling soup. And, I mean, you know the creaminess of avocado.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be really help with sores. It's almost like mucilaginous in a way that it... So that has English cucumbers, avocados, lime juice, maple syrup, a pinch of cayenne, and fresh chopped mint and cilantro. It's cool or room temperature.
Almost like a nice, slightly sweetened salad dressing.
Right. And it's, you know, for swallowing difficulties. And so it's got this creamy texture. Avocados are, you know, kind of a superfood. They're really full of good fats and vitamins. And it's a beautiful soup as well. It has, it's just this lovely green color. Things that look good are helpful as well. You know, sometimes I think that when someone is ill and people think, well, I'm going to give them just this kind of comfort food. And it can be something that's like mashed potatoes or just...
Maybe it has no aesthetic at all.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so something that is enticing visually is going to help with enticing someone to eat,
mm-hmm.
you know, smells and scents and things like that, to anything to kind of spark mm-hmm. that interest.
So with that cucumber, did you peel the cucumber? It sounds like mostly you don't peel.
In cucumber you do,
okay.
and you seed it as
okay.
well. So it's okay. peeled and seeded. Obviously the avocados are pitted and seeded, peeled. But the lime juice, the mint and the cilantro are fresh and chopped, and then you're kind of putting those up on the top.
Are you putting them in blender?
It is blended,
mm-hmm.
yep. And you're adding water to it until you get to the desired consistency.
Mm-hmm.
And then adjusting, you know, for a little bit more lime or salt. And
mm-hmm.
It's got the slight bit of cayenne. You know,
it really sounds wonderful.
Yeah.
And of course, you would be really going for the fresh limes and lemons and not coming out of a bottle.
Right. Fresh squeezed mm-hmm. lime juice.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. You want to avoid any kind of preservatives, you know, anything that's got preservatives in it.
Well, a lot of canned things, they've been cooked and enzymes and things like that just aren't even there anymore.
Right.
So, you know, what
right.
you think, oh, I'll just use the, you know, the real lemon juice I've got in the fridge in a bottle, but that might not have what you're looking for in
right.
a refreshed lemon.
Right. Another recipe I liked quite a bit was green beans with Brazil nuts and basil. The Brazil nuts are grated so that they almost seem like a Parmesan. What I've discovered is that Brazil nuts are an excellent source of selenium. So that is because I was, what an odd nut. You know what I'm thinking? What an odd nut to add, because I've always thought of Brazil nuts, you know, as not super nutritious and really fatty, you know, like it's a, mm-hmm. it's a very high mm-hmm. fat nut.
But of course, now we are looking for fats.
Right.
Healthful fats.
Right.
And so then you do think of the nuts mm-hmm. and the avocados as being.
Right. You know, cashews and all those.
Vegetable fats that are healthy.
Right.
What, does coconut oil fit into this picture?
I don't remember even making anything with coconut oil out of mm-hmm. this cookbook, honestly. I mean, I think that there are a couple things that had coconut milk, because there was like one of those kind of the Tom Kha Kai Thai soup, that kind of coconut chicken lemongrass kind of mm-hmm. soup. And there was that, but I don't remember. She uses olive oil predominantly.
She does. Yeah. I was going to ask you about oils, and can we kind of go to some categories? I'm really kind of interested in this. Like, what are some of the sweeteners that are good? You had mentioned maple syrup, and I've always felt like, intuitively, you can't say sugar is sugar. I just don't believe that. I don't.
Right.
I somehow believe that sap that came out of the ground and brings up minerals and comes out of a tree, that just can't be the same as white granulated sugar. And they may measure what it does to your blood, mm-hmm. glucose or whatever, but, you know, or the magical qualities of honey that come from flowers. I mean, they can't all be the same, but you have to be looking at some of the other things that these sweeteners do and their sources and what they bring, health-giving properties that they bring. So what about sweeteners?
She predominantly uses maple syrup, and she talks about it. I think it's dark, kind of the dark grade B as what I remember it mostly being. And like I said, that was the maple syrup that has properties that are like especially good for prostate cancer or prevention of prostate cancer. And she does use some honey. There's another great recipe that one of the other things is making things that someone can kind of keep on hand. Anytime bar, which is one of these things that you make in a pan that's got nuts and oats and dates and apricots, you know, dried dates and apricots and stuff like that you can make. And that's like a little energy boost throughout the day. There's this recipe for these little turkey patties, which are good little, you know, protein boosts. And so that was another thing I liked quite a bit. I got off your subject of sugars.
Yeah.
I don't
mind if we get off the topic, but it seems like a lot of times when you're really ill like that, you don't really want to sit down at a giant meal. I can see why just being able to reach for a bar or a little patty or something like that and sort of graze during the day when you feel like eating is probably more, you know, than the great big Thanksgiving dinner, you know?
Yeah, that's really key, is to kind of have something that is, you know, just like a little sustaining or sustenance type of go-to for when you're not going to cook something, they don't want to eat a lot, you just need a little something, you just, and it's easy, you know. You're not going to have to even, like these anytime bars, you know, obviously you're not going to have to warm them or, you know, they're just there as a snack. And it's a healthy snack. So that, I mean, a lot of us are super aware of food in the sense of interested in it and knowing all the different types that are out there. And maybe, you know, I have since the 80s have been focused on mostly organic foods and natural foods and unprocessed, but I mean, honestly, probably the majority of the American population eat a lot of processed foods. You know, they're buying the cheese and the white bread and the, you know, additives or prepackaged foods where they're just adding something to it and making it. And it's, you know, culturally, that's, it was in my family when I was growing up. My dad and my grandma, not so much, but my dad's sister was really big into like Hamburger Helper and all these other things, because especially if people are working and sometimes working two jobs, or both parents are working and you have kids, and you're doing what's easy, you're doing what's quick and easy. So a lot of times the type of information that a hospital or an oncologist will give someone regarding diet is just trying to get them to cook more whole foods and get them to eat like a whole type of bread instead of a white bread. Or because this is hard for people. If this is not something that you have been doing, you know, in your own life or in your family, and I mean, it's like a cultural shift. That's a lot of work for people who aren't used to, you know, doing this kind of cooking or eating in general. And that can be, you know, fatiguing in and of itself. They're like, oh my gosh, you know what, now I have to start grocery shopping for all kinds of things I'm not familiar with, that I don't normally cook with. And so in hospitals, they're just trying to get people to like buy whole vegetables and cook whole vegetables as opposed to buying like frozen or canned vegetables. So that's why this kind of thing isn't discussed that much. I mean, they are doing what they can to improve people's nutrition, but they're looking at it from a much broader spectrum and just trying to get people into, you know, raw foods. I mean, not eating them raw especially, but buying like the whole vegetable and cooking it, mm-hmm. or switching from white flour to, you know, wheat flour or whole grains.
So we were going to go over categories, and I am kind of interested. I mean, I'm sure because of the sugar thing, she's not dwelling on desserts.
Right. Oh, but there are desserts.
But there are desserts. So let's talk about what can you have
right
on the sweet department.
Okay. So on the sweet department, there's almond muffin mania. So that's going to be made, you know, like with almond flour and that. Baked apples filled with dates and pecans. You know, and this is perfect season for that, mm-hmm. baked apples. So that's where you're getting all of the benefits of an apple, which is really great. I mean, apples are great for the immune system, and they're really good, have enzymes to aid in digestion. And then you're using dates and pecans to kind of give, you know, protein and some minerals. There's a great pumpkin custard, you know. So that's another thing, custards. Tapioca puddings, all those things are also going to help people who are having, you know,
dryness or
throat
irritation.
Swallowing or mouth issues.
Now, where does dairy fit in? Is there dairy, or you stay away from dairy, or are there benefits from dairy products?
Dairy, honestly, is, I mean, she's saying like for the great pumpkin custard, you can use organic milk or coconut milk. You know, dairy causes mucus. Dairy in often is kind of inflammatory for a lot of people. Mm. I think that's a personal choice. She doesn't say absolutely. She's not trying to really advocate for a specific diet. She's not advocating for, you know, kind of the raw diet or, you know, complete cut. You know, a lot of times people go through cancer treatment and then everything's about, you know, oh my God, stop eating this, stop eating that, you know, all these things that you, and they go into super strict diets, which, some of those
like
things
all
are
raw.
All raw. All raw is great for prevention, and it's great for after treatment, but it's not always great for during treatment. It, you know, I mean, you have to have just a little bit of leeway, I think. And this is all personal. You know, every single person going through cancer mm-hmm. is going to make all of their own decisions for themselves. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not going to say that anybody's wrong. I think that, you know, everyone needs to work with their own intuition. Like I said, in that instance with me telling my mind telling me I really should be eating these, you know, kale and collards and everything. And my body saying, I want that sweet potato soup and I want that carrot soup. So I think you really have to listen and figure out what's right for you. And I know that a lot of people are very confident in raw foods being the most beneficial. But, you know, I kind of come at it from a Chinese medicine standpoint mm-hmm. and always putting cold foods or cool foods in the body creates kind of an imbalance. You need to have warming foods mm-hmm. as well. So,
well, I was wondering if there's a little Ayurvedic influence too. The same idea, what's warming and what's cooling, and And so also just for your own temperament or your own body type.
Right.
There's different kinds right. of foods that are going to
right. Well, a lot of the spices that are in here, I think, come from that Ayurvedic, you know, the nutmeg and the cardamom and the ginger. Those are all used quite a bit in Ayurvedic medicine. And almond milk is, you know, milks. Well, they usually, they're too golden, you know, the kind of the golden milk, which is turmeric based. That's almost always in dairy, in cow milk. So, like I said, in this great pumpkin custard, she says that you can use 1 cup of organic milk or coconut milk. And that has got, she's using canned pumpkin puree, and you can buy that organically as well. But, I mean, at this time of the year, you can make your own.
Yeah.
And that has ground ginger, ground cloves, allspice, nutmeg, 2 eggs, and then it's got that grade A dark amber maple syrup. So mm-hmm. it's grade A. That's what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also got molasses, and molasses is really good in B vitamins.
Right.
So a few more desserts are cardamom maple mini macaroons, coconut rice pudding. You know, I love rice pudding.
And then that is comfort food, isn't it?
Apricot date nut truffles.
Oh.
Oh, yeah, she's got some.
Oh, could we have that recipe?
Yeah, sure. So the chocolate apricot date nut truffles, you're using dried apricots, water, cacao, the dark chocolate, 64 to 72% cacao, almonds, the medjool dates, orange zest, and shredded coconut. And you're, you know, kind of soaking, like you usually do with dried fruit, you're soaking the apricots, stirring boiling water into the chopped chocolate, and whisking that until it's melted and glossy, and then you're adding, you grind the almonds in a food processor, and then start adding the almonds and the dates and the orange zest and the salt to the chocolate. And as it starts to get thicker, eventually what you're going to do is that you're going to, you know, how you see these, like, you know, medicine balls or something, you're going to roll them into these small balls and then roll that with orange zest, additional orange zest and coconut.
Oh, that sounds wonderful.
And then there's poached pears with saffron broth. I know, doesn't that sound super good? And strawberries with mango coconut sauce. So there's, you know, mm-hmm. so, I mean, these, it yeah. sounds, you know, it sounds like, oh, this is, you know, this cookbook that's, you know, kind of going to be super medicinal, which it is. But, I mean, I'm 3 years out. I'm not really cooking for myself for, you know, to deal with side effects and symptoms at all anymore. And there's, like, recipes in here that I'll be using, you know, for the next 20 years.
They're delicious.
Yeah, they're delicious.
Mm-hmm.
They're really super good. And mm-hmm. you can make them and know that, you know, you're benefiting someone. I mean, whoever, mm-hmm. people who are healthy, children, you know, keeping anybody healthy, mm-hmm. grandparents, you know,
right.
taking
right.
something, taking a dish over to someone or having someone over to dinner and knowing that what you're feeding them is nourishing for them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to ask you about categories of fats. What are some of the sources of fats that are best? So we talked about nuts, nut fats being mm-hmm. good.
She doesn't really have kind of categories in
okay.
the sense of...
Not in that way.
Not in that way.
But she does have anti-inflammatory and antioxidant, right?
So if we just go back for a second and I go to... So if you're going to things that are anti-inflammatory. So at the very beginning, one of these recipes that are, you know, for specific side effects... So for anti-inflammatory, so she has vital vegetables, and there's a baby bok choy with yam and ginger recipe, emerald greens, which are chard, and some kale that are with orange, broccoli and ginger and garlic, and then a stir-fried baby bok choy with shiitake mushrooms, and then a shredded carrot and beet salad. And for anti-inflammatory, if the person is needing, you know, protein-building foods, then she's got a lemon custard salmon salad. When I've made that, it's quite good.
Oh, that sounds good.
Yeah,
we might go back
really
to
good.
That one.
Yeah. And then there's poached salmon with a Moroccan pesto. And that Moroccan pesto is in that Dollops of Yum chapter where they have all... I mean, there's just a ton of those really super delicious little dollops of yum, and then there's a triple citrus ginger black cod recipe. And then for tonics and elixirs, it, for an anti-inflammatory, there's that Common Wheels, you know, most nourishing and healing tea that I talked about at the beginning. And then there's green tea with ginger and lemonade and a triple berry smoothie. There's, you know, there's these smoothies also in here. Those kind of, when you take fruit and it's kind of, it reminds me of shaved ice. There's that, which is, you know, so mm-hmm. that's nourishing and cooling for the throat. Then if you have, let's say, for anemia, which is another side effect, that would be that bone broth, and then there's the minestrone soup recipe and a velvety red lentil dal recipe. Vital vegetables for anemia are kale with sweet potatoes and pecans, and then there's a kale and carrots recipe, and the anytime food is a Mediterranean lentil salad.
Wonderful. Well, I want to go back to the salmon salad.
Yeah.
That sounded really good.
All right. So let me look that up for you real quick.
I have a feeling I'm going to try to acquire this book. It's very enticing.
Yeah. It's a great book. Mm-hmm. And like I said, for those listening, it's a beautiful book visually as well.
So it's we're talking about The Cancer Fighting Kitchen. That's the name of the book by Rebecca Katz.
On the lemon mustard salmon salad, you're going to start off with one 7.5 ounce can of boneless, skinless sockeye salmon, or you can have leftover salmon when you've made poached or cooked salmon. 3 teaspoons of Dijon mustard, 2 teaspoons of freshly squeezed lemon juice, 2 teaspoons of extra virgin olive oil, pinch of cayenne, pinch of sea salt, 3 tablespoons of finely chopped celery, and 2 tablespoons of finely chopped fresh flat leaf parsley. And variations are you can add capers or chopped radishes to this dish. I had some super delicious radishes this summer from the CSA that we had, and I started putting them in everything, you know, making chicken salad with a little bit of chopped radish in it. So I would probably add that next time I make this. And it also variation is that you can make the salmon salad with the lemon basil drizzle that I talked about mm-hmm. before, mm-hmm. or a tablespoon of the Moroccan pesto, you know. So you can, and the great thing about those drizzles is they stay in the fridge for, you know, a couple weeks, and you can start adding them and all kinds. I mean, you can just get super creative with it. I mean, why wouldn't, you know, add something like that next time you make potato salad in the summer, you know. I mean, especially in the summer right. when all of those are available fresh, you know, mm-hmm. although nowadays we can get fresh basil almost all year long. You just break the salmon up into a bowl with a fork, stir in the mustard, lemon juice, olive oil, cayenne, and, you know, whatever you're going to add and mix it up. That's it. Serve it on lettuce or serve it with crackers.
Sounds wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, I've been talking with Pat Gray. She's from Gay's Mills and just recently moved here. And is sort of house-sitting her friend's farm and the animals that you have there, which are alpacas?
Yes, we right. have 5 alpacas, 3 angora goats, and an extra kind of mascot goat. She's not a fiber goat, but she's super sweet.
And what are they raised for? Are they raised for fiber?
Yeah, my mm-hmm. friend Liz, the farm where I live, Liz also went through cancer treatment several years ago, before I did. And during her recovery, a friend of hers, a colleague, taught her to knit, and she became an avid knitter. And recently, in the last couple years, she's learned weaving from our local artist, Elin. And so she had this land here that she's had for quite a while and thought, I'm spending all this money on buying yarn, which is not cheap. And I've got a farm. Why am I spending so much money? I'm just going to get some fiber animals. And so that's what she's got.
Well, that's quite an undertaking. And she doesn't live here all the time. She has a job somewhere else.
Yeah. But, that's why I live here all the time now.
I think you just sort of dropped into paradise, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great. It's exactly what I needed when I needed it.
Yeah. Isn't that wonderful?
Mm-hmm.
So just once again, you've been listening to Who's in the Kitchen. I'm Philothea Beeson. I've been talking with Pat Gray about a wonderful book that's really helped her through cancer treatment and recovery, and it's called Cancer Fighting Kitchen. And we've just been enjoying the insights and the knowledge that's gone into this book and the just really wonderful recipes and beautiful pictures that are in the book. So I'm hoping that that will be helpful to some of our listeners.
Well, I just want to say thank you so much for having me. It's been a lovely time, and I've had a great time talking about something that was important to me and I hope is important to your listeners. And thank you again for sharing your gifts with the community, because it's so appreciated.
So thanks so much for tuning in to Who's in the Kitchen. It airs every Saturday at noon, and we're going into our 10th year. And so thanks so much for your support. And be sure to stay tuned to WDRT this afternoon for Island Tunes, which is a fun show to listen to, and more good music in the afternoon. And thanks for supporting community radio. We'll see you next week.
That's right, Mike Sidnor here. Join me, won't you, for great eclectic tunes. If you're a listener, thank you. If not, tune in on Saturdays, 2 to 3, WDRT 91.9 Viroqua. And all these songs you've never heard before. No, that's not right. Remember, new songs or old songs in about 3 minutes.